Previously on Thomas and the Bible, well, let's see. The entire Old Testament, that's what. That's what's previously on Thomas and the Bible. The entire old crappy Testament. Done. We are on to bigger and arguably, questionably, maybe better things. Probably not. They're probably not any better. Okay. Hello, it's Thomas and the Bible. Thank you, Harley, for that intro. Well, New Testament, guys, the book of Matthew. That's the book we are reading. And so I've been doing a lot of research. I've found that there's no end to the amount of research that I could do on this. Hey, guys, funny story. Some amount of writing has been done on the things like the New Testament historicity and the Gospels and how they... Yeah, turns out I'm not the first one to look into this issue. Kind of weird, you know? There's like 4 million... There's as much as I could ever want to read in my lifetime. So I'm trying to find some little nuggets to share with you guys. I began writing a dissertation on Matthew, and then I realized, well, I still have to read it, so... So I can't just do a whole thing on Matthew. But I want to remind you, like I said in the last episode, I was pretty drunk. But from what people have told me, I want to kind of try to keep in mind the story from the perspective of Matthew. And then when we get to the rest of the Gospels, we can think about how it's different. And feel free to point out anything you notice in how it's different and all that, or any contradictions and stuff. So that'll be a fun little Bible mini game we can play. And so I guess we'll get into it. So we're starting Matthew. We're going to read Matthew 1 through 5. Here's some little quick things about Matthew. Written between 80 and 90 CE, which I guess means AD. You know, I don't know when that happened, but now it's CE, Common Era. This is the funny thing. The gospel, you know, it's called the gospel according to Matthew. The according to Matthew part was added sometime in the second century. Isn't that funny? So it's years, decades after it was written, someone added like, I'm pretty sure this was according to Matthew. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, if you think so, all right, go ahead and add it. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to add it right here. I'm just going to write it in. Just right here, according to Matthew. And then that just becomes like what's accepted. Like it's just, oh yeah, the gospel. And it's interesting how easy it is. And that's the problem with the Bible, or really any holy book, is it's once something gets added in kind of before the internet, maybe even after the internet, I don't know. But back in these days, it's so hazy. So Jesus lived, died, whatever, around zero. Year whatever, I don't know, zero or something, roughly. And then all this stuff gets written down 80 to 90 years later or more, maybe a little less, maybe it's only 50 years. But either way, it all gets written down then. Do you have any idea how inaccurate that would be? Well, I'm sure you do. You're listening to this podcast. And then combine that with things that people want to write in, and this is coming from Bart Ehrman, book I listened to on audiobook. I think I listened to like three of his. They're really interesting, actually. But anyway, lots of things like when the political and religious climate was a certain way, maybe one of the, I don't know, the holy people of the time, scribes, whoever managed the library, the librarian of the time, they would think like, you know, people are doing too much of this, of X. Of thing X. I'm just going to innocently write into the Bible here and find a convenient spot. I'm going to write in, and then Jesus said, definitely don't do X. And then just, I'm going to write that in for the greater good. And then that becomes part of the Bible. It's actually, even among believers, even among people in seminary, as Bart Ehrman said, which I found really interesting, even when he was a believer, when you get to a certain level of Bible scholarship, they know that. I mean, they know that there are forgeries, there are insertions there are all kinds of inaccuracies and stuff, and they all know that, and it, but yet it doesn't really get told to common people, to common, you know, churchgoers. That's not really part of any sermon. So that's interesting. I also found this cool chart that graphs the differences and similarities between Mark, Luke, and Matthew. It doesn't include John. John is a little weird. We'll get to that later, I guess. But for now, we're going to talk about Mark, Luke, and Matthew. In case you don't know this, there's this Q source theory, because Mark is the primary gospel. It has like the most unique information or whatever. And then the theory is that Matthew and Luke borrowed mainly from Mark, but then also both borrowed from another source, and that's known as the Q source. And people don't really know what that is. It's speculated that it's could be, I guess, oral tradition, could be some document that was lost. Some people think this theory doesn't make sense because a document that important wouldn't have been lost, and there's some other reasons. But I think from what I gather, most scholars think this is what it is. It's Luke and Matthew are sort of derivative. Mark is more unique and kind of has more info of its own. And then Matthew and Luke are derivative of that, but also use a Q source. And then there's this chart that has color-coded pie charts of what matches. And Luke and Matthew share 41-45% of Mark. And that's 76% of Mark, and it's all kind of, that's all what's in common. And then Matthew and Luke have like little chunks, like 23 and 25% that they share. And it's really interesting. So I found that graph somewhere. I forget where now. I copied it. So whatever, just look for it sometime. That's good. Okay. And then, another thing is this is very unlikely to have been written by an eyewitness. Scholars think this based on the analysis and all that, and there's lots of reasons for that. And so basically the last thing the book of Matthew is, the gospel according to Matthew, it's not really according to Matthew, it's definitely not according to Matthew, and it's not really a firsthand account. So right there, already in those two things, it's none of what it says it is. So that's kind of interesting. But let's go ahead and get to it. Again, there's infinite stuff I could say about these, about gospel research and scholarship and all that. It's pretty interesting, but we could get lost forever. Matthew 1, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham began. Okay, so here's the thing. Now, I mentioned in the last episode, and you should probably know by now from various things, that for whatever reason, it's important that Jesus be a direct descendant of Abraham. Or I guess a descendant. I don't know. What's the difference? Direct versus descendant. It's some sort of descendant of Abraham. I'm not sure what the direct adds there. But anyway, or maybe it's by... Oh, maybe the direct adds like it's only by males or something, by men, like a son of a son of a son. Anyway, whatever. And so the first part of Matthew is just some begats, and it just somehow proves that Jesus is direct descended from Abraham. So that's important for some reason. I'll go through it quickly. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Judas and his brethren. Judas begat Phares and Zerah. Phares, some people I don't know. Aaron begat Solomon. Some people. Let's see. Is there anybody? Oh, Jesse begat David the king. David begat Solomon. I remember them. Solomon begat Roboam, kind of remember that. Roboam begat Abia, Asa, Josaphat, Joram, Ozias, Joatham, Achaz, Ezekias begat Manasseh, Amon, Josias, Jeconias, and then they were carried away to Babylon, apparently. And then Jeconias to Salathiel, Zerubbabel, let's see, Abiud, Eliakim, Azor, Sadox, Akim, Eliud, Eleazar, Mathan, Jacob, Joseph, and then of whom was born Jesus. But that's, you know what I've never, you know, it's funny though. So it just did an accounting of all the men, right? And I think that's important because, you know, it's the Bible, so women don't matter. It says like, Joseph, blah, blah, blah. And it tracks all the men, Jotham, Achaz, all the men leading to Jesus. But then Mary was impregnated by God. So what is it? So how does it matter that Jacob was, or Joseph was Jesus's father? How does that even matter? I've never thought about that before. Like, what is the point of that? So it's like, oh, yes, he's the son of the son of the son of this. Oh, well, actually, he's the son of God. So he doesn't have a father. But if he did have a father, it would be the son of 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 Abraham. So that's kind of funny. I find that hilarious. Like, Joseph is his stepdad. I mean, really, there's no... Joseph is no more Jesus's father than any other man alive, than any other man at the time. I mean, sure, Joseph was married to Mary, but that doesn't, I mean, if Mary was impregnated by supernatural means, does it matter who her husband is? This really doesn't matter. You know, like it has nothing to do with anything. So that's funny. So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations, and from David unto the carrying away of Babylon are 14 generations, and from the carrying away unto Babylon unto Christ are 14 generations. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. When as his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph before they came together, so they're married, right? Before they came together as and had sex, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. That guy took his time. So according to this Bible, Joseph and Mary were married, and then sometime between getting married and having sex, Joseph just didn't get around to it. He's like, I'm just tired. I don't know. Sure, it's been months. I'll get to it. You know, I'll get there when I get there. Okay, stop rushing me. And then she's like, hey, I'm already pregnant. What? But it has to be between when they got married and when... she was found with child. So it has to be after they got married is what I meant to say, rather. And that's what I find funny, because how could you have known that she was pregnant in a reasonable time period that Joseph just didn't have sex with her? Like, he really, maybe Mary was Joseph's beard. Never thought about that before. Guys, new theory. I'm coming up with all kinds of theories here. This one I think has merit. You ready? So Mary is cheating on Joseph, right? Obviously. Mary cheats on Joseph. She's pregnant. Joseph is actually gay. This is my theory. Joseph's gay. He doesn't want to have sex with Mary. Part of the reason why Mary's cheating on him, right? So it kind of comes together, you see? And then so when Mary says like, the Lord did it, Joseph is like, oh, okay, this is good. I can be with Mary as my beard, you know, and I don't really have to have sex with her. She's having a baby. I can just whatever. I can just go with that. And then no one's the wiser. That's the reason he's willing to go with the lie, because he's already lying anyway. Okay. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privily. God. The misogyny is just, I love just, and okay, few thoughts. Sorry, guys. So many thoughts. Already love the new testicle because it's every single sentence is funny. Every single sentence besides the begats is interesting. It's something to think about. I'm sure this will slow down. It can't keep up this pace forever, but it's very interesting. And the second thing, the sort of implicit, like minimized, misogyny, like just the aside, like, oh, and he was just going to put her away. it's classic. It's really funny. So it just very casually says like, well, he didn't really want to make an example of her. Like, so he could have had her killed, you know, cause she's pregnant with someone else's baby. He had grounds to probably have her, I don't know, stoned to death or, you know, but since he's a good man, he didn't really want to make her a public example. So he was just going to hide her privily, like put her away. He was just going to hide her in a cave or something. until she had the baby. Then maybe just, if, I don't know, throw the baby in a dumpster or something. I'm not sure what the plan was. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream. And again, this goes with my theory of Joseph being gay, because if he had her stoned, well, then that's another beard he's got to find. Then he's out one beard. He's down uno beard-o. And that's just paperwork he's not wanting to have to fill out. He's fine with how he has it. He's got a beard. He can go be, you know, he can hit up the gay clubs of the time, the Bethlehemian clubs. So while he was thinking about these things, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is the Holy Ghost. Oh, man. This is the most important story in human history in a lot of ways. And it's so dumb. It's just so dumb. He's like, oh, yeah, my wife's pregnant. I can't believe it. I never had sex with it. Ah, fear not. It's the Holy Ghost. Oh, okay. Sounds good. In a dream. You know, if I have a dream like that, I think, wow, that was a wild and crazy dream. Now, what am I going to do about the fact that my wife is pregnant by another man? But no, he's like, oh, that sounds, seems reasonable. Seems good. And she shall bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. Now all this was done, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, behold, a virgin shall come, shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us. Then Joseph, why is Emmanuel? Okay. So he's saying this fulfills the prophecy whereby blah, 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 and they shall call his name Emmanuel, but then he's called Jesus. So what's the difference? Does that mean the same thing? Probably does. Then Joseph, being raised from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord had bidden him, and took unto him his wife, and knew her not till she had brought forth her firstborn son and called his name Jesus. So that's another thing. So he's like, okay, I will not have sex with you until you have our son is the whole, you know, is God, essentially, the son of God. And then like probably a few hours after giving birth to Jesus, he's like, all right, come on, I'm ready. I've been waiting all this time. Mary is so holy and saintly, and she's a virgin, which means young woman probably, but let's assume it means virgin. She gives birth to Jesus. And then Joseph just goes to town on her, I'm sure. I mean, he's got to be a bit backed up at this point. And he's allowed to. Like, that's cool, you know. And I just find it funny that like, this holy, you know, Virgin Mary that we worship, I just find it funny imagining Joseph just like, all right, well, you've had your baby. You've had your time. Now it's my time. So Matthew 2. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. So this all happened very quickly. Keep in mind, this should be the first time we're hearing about this, because you and I supposedly have never read this. Like, we're just starting a New Testament. We're just like, hey, let's check out this Testament of God that's the most important thing ever written. And then we're just hearing like, okay, there's some wise men who know that he's king of the Jews for some reason. And we saw a star, which that's never discussed, that why there would be a star, but they've seen a star. And they're just coming to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written by the prophet, and thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star hath appeared. And then sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search diligently for the young child. And when you've found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also. So the king, Herod, is like, hey, yeah, I want to worship that king. Totally. I could totally go for some worshiping right now of a Jewish king. Let me know when you find him. And then I'll come and we can worship together. You know, worshiping's more fun in packs of four, not three. So that's his plan. And then secretly, I think he wants to kill the kid, I'm guessing. Otherwise, what would be the point of this all? When they had heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And he probably had a poopy diaper. So they likely worshipped a baby with a poopy diaper, which I think is hilarious. I don't care who a baby's going to be. I don't care if a baby is going to be like the greatest human that's ever lived. There's not much point in worshiping a baby. These are more things that I'm glad I'm reading this now because they've never occurred to me before just when thinking about the story. But what do you do when you worship a baby? How does that go? What does it do for the baby? Does it accomplish something? Like, oh, you baby, you're going to be awesome, man. I know you're just shitting yourself. And, you know, then we have to clean up your poop and you cry pretty much all the time and you're a huge, but you're the king of the Jews and I'm going to worship you right now. It's like, not really worth anything to me. I mean, what would you do? I mean, even if I believed all this and I found out this is the son of God, I'd be like, oh, well, when he gets older, maybe we'll have a talk or something, you know, maybe he'll tell me something. What good does worshiping him do when he's a baby? But anyway, when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And as the great Eddie Izzard joked, this is because the only places open at night were like gas stations. So they just bought this crap that was at the gas station. It was a pretty funny bit. I can't remember where I heard it, but it was good. I mean, which comedy special? But just watch all of Eddie Izzard's comedy specials and then maybe you'll find it. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother and flee into Egypt, and be thou there until I bring word. For Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt I have called my son. Oh. Well, that's why. Okay, you know what? That explains some things. Remember those really crappy prophecies I referenced? That there was a website that was like, you know, Christian Answers or something, and it was like 50 prophecies in the Old Testament that are fulfilled in the New. Well, I'm realizing now that these are actually being quoted. So Matthew, or not Matthew, whoever wrote Matthew, whose name was likely not Matthew, they're quoting parts in the Old Testament. So when I read that quote that said, out of Egypt have I called my son, and then the conclusion was the child will be born, you know, outside of Egypt, or so whatever it was, I was like, wow, that really is weird. Where would you come up with that conclusion? I mean, that sounded very crazy to me. This makes me think it's a little less crazy just because now I get it. Like, now I get where that crazy Christian lady came up with her list, because it's probably things that were quoted. So that's interesting. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and all the coasts thereof from 2 years and old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet. So here we go, more quotes. In Ramah there was a voice heard, lamentation and weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and would not be comforted because they are not. But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeareth in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's life. And he arose and took the child, the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither. Notwithstanding being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee. And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophets, he shall be called a Nazarene. So that's another thing that's supposedly spoken to the prophets. And they're like, hey, guys, I know we're on our way to Jerusalem, was it? Or was it Judea? I already forget. We're on our way. I think Judea. Hey, we're on our way to Judea. You know, I did see, though, that there was a prophecy that said, like, we'd make a pit stop in Nazareth. I still don't know. Sorry. I'm just looking at the map here. Let's see. Nazareth, yeah. If we could just take, like, a bathroom break in Nazareth, then the prophecy's fulfilled. We're kind of all, we earned some points there. It won't take too long. It's a quick diversion. And then we'll be on our way. So just so we can just check that box, you know. So that's how that went. Matthew 3. In those days came John the Baptist, preaching in the wilderness of Judea, and saying, repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Excuse me. For this is he that was spoken by the prophet Esaias, who I don't remember, saying, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his path straight. And the same John had his raiment of camel's hair and a leathern girdle about his loins, and his meat was locusts and wild honey. That's disgusting. They went out to him Jerusalem and all Judea and all the region round about Jordan, and were baptized of him in Jordan, confessing their sins. But when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from my wrath, from the wrath to come? Bring forth therefore fruits meet for repentance, and think not to say within yourselves, we have Abraham to our father, for I say unto you, that God is able of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham. And now also the axe is laid under the root of the trees. Therefore, every tree which bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. I indeed baptize you with water unto repentance, but he that cometh after me is mightier than I, whose shoes I am not worthy to bear. He shall baptize you with the Holy Ghost and with fire, whose fan is in his hand, and he will throughly purge his floor and gather his wheat into the garner, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. Then cometh Jesus from Galilee to Jordan unto John to be baptized of him. But John forbade him, saying, So there's this John the Baptist guy. He's like head guy for some people. I don't know. And he's like, oh, one day there's going to be a guy who's going to be like even better than me at baptizing. And that'll be cool. And then Jesus comes and he's like, hey, dude, baptize me. And then John forbade him, saying, I have need to be baptized of thee. And comest thou to me? So he's like, no, dude, you baptize me. And Jesus answering said unto him, suffer it to be so now, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness. Then he suffered him. And Jesus, when he was baptized, went up straightway out of the water, and lo, the heavens were opened unto him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting upon him. And lo, a voice from heaven saying, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. So God took the time, I guess, like he took a minute out of his busy God day when Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, to open the clouds and say, like, this is my Son. But how many people could see Jesus at that time? I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, heard God. But if you were, like, say you were a mile away or so, or even, I don't know, like a half a mile, you're like, who? Who's he pointing at? Is there somebody there? What's happening here? Does anybody know? Does anybody know what's happening? Like, how much use was this? I mean, maybe a few people right there saw it. But if everyone in the world could see it, there would be no confusion, and we would all be Christians, and that would be easy, pretty much. You know, if all of the Native Americans at this time could have seen it, if You know, people who lived in Asia could have seen it, but no, just like 10, 12 people. That's about it. So we're on to Matthew 4. And when Jesus, then when Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil, oh, then was Jesus. And when he had fasted 40 days, so this is, again, we're just told this. We don't know anything. I mean, I know there's, the funny thing is, there's all kinds of tradition, and there's all kinds of, like, baggage that we all bring in from stuff we know about the Bible and Christianity and all that. But if I was just reading this, and then I saw, then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil, I'd say, who, what, huh? Who's the devil? Does anyone know? Does anyone know who the devil is? I currently do not know who that is. I have no clue. I don't know. I know some, there's like a Satan kind of, maybe it's that character. If I was a genius, maybe I would put that together, but I don't think I would. And why does he have to go to the, it's written like this is the normal thing. Like, well, in cases such as these, when you have a son of God, it's of course natural. The first thing he's going to do is to go wander into the forest. And then the devil will tempt him for some reason. Like, that's normal. It's just presented as though this is the obvious thing that happens. So why? Why does it need to happen? Just avoid that forest, you know? If that's where the devil is, just maybe don't go there. Is there some reason? Anyway. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward an hungered. And when the tempter came to him, he said, if thou be the Son of God, command these stones be made bread. But he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. So that's not really a contradiction to me. I don't really get it. So this is something I actually remember reading from a while ago, but so what happens here is the devil tells him, like, hey, if you're the Son of God, turn those stones into bread. And then Jesus says, men shall not live by bread alone. So what? But you could still turn them into bread, right? I understand men shall not live by bread alone, but they could be a part of a balanced breakfast. You know, like if you turn these rocks to bread, then we could have toast and sandwiches and stuff and all that. Like, how does that contradict what the devil is asking him to do? Again, there's all this baggage. Like, you can't do what the devil asks you. That's bad. But I don't know that. How do we know that? I don't know who the devil is. Then the devil taketh him up into the holy city. Jesus is still listening for some reason, right? Because because if I were Jesus, I would have heard the devil ask me one thing. And let's say we're going with the assumption that it makes sense that you can't do what the devil asks you ever. First off, that's a very easy challenge, like avoiding temptation. If you know, I can't do what the devil asks me, then just anything the devil asks you, just say, nah, sorry. And then just leave. But no, for some reason, Jesus hangs out with him. Like, I don't know what he needs from the devil, but whatever. He setteth him on a pinnacle of the temple and saith unto him, if thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest any time thou dash thy foot against a stone. So now he's saying, hey, just if you're the Son of God, just jump off this building because you'll be saved. Which this devil is starting to sound like a smart guy. This is just a skeptic. The devil is actually just a rational human being who's dealing with someone's claim to be the Son of God. And he's like, well, if you're the Son of God, then do this. And he's like, no. Okay, well, then do this. Nope. Well, then what? So I really have sympathy for the devil. And I think that's some sort of song. But seriously, he's just like a skeptical person. Jesus said unto him, it is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. Again, the devil taketh him up to an exceedingly high mountain and sheweth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said, all these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. Then saith Jesus unto him, get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship thy Lord, the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. Then the devil leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him. That sounds like some weird sexual thing. Now, when Jesus had heard John was cast into prison, he departed into Galilee. So that's it. So that's the devil tempting Jesus. First off, you're the Son of God. You are God. You're the Son of God and you are God. How tempting is the devil to you, really? I mean, that does not sound very tempting. It's like if you were the richest man in the world, and then I'm like, dude, if you eat that dog shit, I will give you $10. And you're like, no. And everyone's like, whoa, did you see him resist that temptation? It's like, yeah, that's easy. I could do that. If I had a bazillion dollars, I could do that. If I had $0 and was like starving to death, maybe I take that bet. Maybe I take that dare. I don't know. So then John the Baptist, it seems, has been cast into prison. I don't know why. So he departed to Galilee. And leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is upon the seacoast, in the borders of Zebulun and the Naphtalim, that it might be fulfilled that which is spoken by Esaias the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun, the land of Naphtalim, by the way of the sea beyond Jordan, Galilee of Gentiles. Now I understand what Hitchens was getting at when he said, it's not terribly impressive for someone to say, hey, what does that prophecy say? It says I'm going to be, you know, I'll be in such and such place and then such and such place. Okay, let's just stop by there just so the prophecy's right. And then that's it. Like, it's not terribly exciting to me. That's pretty stupid. The people which sat in darkness saw great light, and to them which sat in the region and shadow of death, light is sprung up. From that time, Jesus began to preach and say, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brethren, Simon called Peter, and Andrew his brother. Simon called Peter. So his name's Simon, but he's called Peter? Is that what his name? Casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And they saith unto him, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And they're like, no, we don't eat men. We eat fish. Sorry, I don't know if this guy was... I want to fish men. Oh, okay, dude. Am I going to like cast a hook out and then a dude is going to be like, oh, shiny, and then bite it, and then I'm going to eat that dude? No. And they straightway left their nets and followed him. Well, bring the nets. You might need them. And going on from thence, he saw two other brethren, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in a ship with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets, and he called them. Well, you could have had two perfectly good nets to give these people who are mending their nets, but no. And they immediately left the ship and their father and followed him. Father must have been pissed. Like, dudes, we got work to do. What are you doing? And Jesus went all about Galilee, and teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with divers diseases and torments, and that which were possessed with the devils, and which were lunatic, and those that had the palsy, and healed them. Okay, easy, he just healed them, done. And there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee, and from Decapolis, and from Jerusalem, and Judea, and beyond Jordan. And Matthew 5. Oh my God, this is a long one. Okay, well, this is the Sermon on the Mount, guys. You ready? Matthew 5. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And as it said in Life of Brian, he just said, blessed are the meek. Well, that's nice of him. They've had a hell of a time. I got to watch Life of Brian. Especially when reading this. I've watched it a bunch of times, but it's been a while, actually. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers. or the pacemaker. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Why, wait a minute. I thought the poor in spirit had the kingdom of heaven. How many people get this kingdom of heaven? Damn it. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt hath lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on an hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Well, there you go. Matthew 17. I've quoted that a bunch of times. I've seen it referenced. It is just one quote. So I understand if anyone wants to find a reason to say, oh, that doesn't mean the Old Testament still stands. That's just one quote or something. I don't know. But it does, you know, he's not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill. But the thing is, this could have been one of those things people entered in later. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. But anyway, for verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one title shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Well, I mean, that's, what am I to believe, guys? What am I to believe? It's pretty clear right there. Jesus believes in the Old Testament. It says, yeah, whatever. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter the kingdom of heaven. Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. That's a very specific example. Was there a guy named Raca who was like mad at his brother for saying you shall be in danger of the council or something? I don't know. What does Raca mean? Hold on, let me Google it. So it's only ever used in this verse. So that's always fun. And it means, it's a word of contempt. So it's just like a curse word or an insult kind of. So it's not a name, but it's capitalized. But anyway, it's whoever like insults their brother in that way shall be in danger of the council. But whoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar and there remembrance thy brother hath aught against thee, that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother and then come and offer thy gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly while thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. That's weird, okay? Verily I say unto you, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the utmost farthing. Ye have heard it said, that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman or lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Well, that sucks because that's bad news. I'm in hell then. So we can be glad this is not real. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. Yeah, well, it makes sense. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off. That is definitely a masturbation comment, 100%. So he's saying, like, look, if your eye is wandering, just gouge out your own eyeball, because better do that than be in hell, which we don't really know much about hell, by the way. This is all out of the blue. Pretending we just finished the Old Testament and we are starting the New Testament, we don't know anything else. We don't know what hell is. That is not anything we're familiar with. So I find this book a little frustrating. It doesn't explain anything. It just assumes you know. It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. Ew, so no divorce, guys. That is in clear terms. That is Jesus saying in absolutely no uncertain terms, no divorce allowed. No divorce allowed, guys. Jesus said it. This is not an Old Testament thing. This is not, oh, that's a weird, ambiguous thing. No, Jesus says you can't do it. No one follows that. That's interesting. Kind of interesting. Again, ye have heard it hath been said of them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the great city of the king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. It's a good reason not to swear on your head, I guess. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Ye have heard it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. So turn the other cheek. That's kind of interesting. So doesn't really make sense, because if someone's hitting you, they're saying, well, don't hit him back. Just give him the other cheek to hit. I'd say just, how about better advice would be, hey, don't do that. It's pretty simple. Guys, I improved Jesus's timeless pronouncement of turn the other cheek. I've improved it very easily. Took no thought. Instead of turn the other cheek, which doesn't seem like that would do anything. Just say, hey, man, what? Come on. Like, just say that. Quoth Jesus, say, hey, man, come on. Anyway. If any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. That also would not work. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Ye have heard it that hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, and do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Now that's interesting. I like that message. That's Jesus's classic. It's classic Jesus, guys. That's nice. I still think I'm never going to love my enemy. I don't think there's any reason to do that, but I understand, like, you know, I think it's nice to do good to people that hate you. That could be like a good way to fight hate. So that's good advice. I like that. Praying doesn't do anything, but I understand the thought. That ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? If ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans do so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. Well, that's easy. So that's the end of our reading for today, and that was super long, a long episode because of how interesting it is. Things actually happen. We went from the birth of Jesus all the way to right into the Sermon on the Mount, like immediately. So that's crazy. It was an okay sermon. As far as sermons on mounts go, it was in the top half, I would say. I'm not a fan of sermons, but I could follow along. So that was okay. Had some good messages, had some bullshit ones, that's for sure. But interesting stuff. So this character Jesus has some promise, and we'll see how he develops through puberty. All right, guys, please support what I'm doing at patreon.com/TNTheB, all one word, TNTheB. Please support, make a small pledge. You will not even notice it, but I will notice it, and I will thank you every episode if you make a big enough pledge. So thank you so much to my patrons. So I'll thank a couple of my patrons, new patrons. I can't remember if I already thanked you, but Adrian Borschoff, I have no problem thanking Adrian a ton. Awesome guy. Been on Atheistically Speaking. Christopher Ruber and Bonnie Baker, new patrons. Thank you guys so much. Now I'll thank my all-time top patrons, John Bodley, Marcel, thank you. George Green, thank you. Sarah McPike, thank you. Scott McFarland, thank you so much. Charles Bangwiener, thank you. Tom Chambers, thank you. Brian Gerfort, thank you. Lee Primesberger, thank you. John P., thank you. David Vandervlies, thank you. Travis Peterson, and of course, an honorable thank you to Tor Malkovic and Roberto. I love you guys. Thank you so much. You make my day. You really do. You make the show continue. And with the support of patrons like you, this will continue into the New Testament and then to another book and to other things. So please, patreon.com/TNTheB if you want to support it. And with that, I'll see you next week for some more New Testament amazingness. That was fun.